This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho,
Men in Blazers World Headquarters.
This is the Men in Blazers podcast.
And we're back.
We are back.
Like Landon Donovan, but even bolder.
He did retire, right? I didn't just dream it up that Landon Donovan retired.
He's back.
And he made a pretty big deal about his retirement.
He
if
has
I remember
risen.
Rightly,
he
you,
has
were,
risen.
You were gone for about 7.5 months making a film about his retirement.
I was.
Okay.
I was.
That was a waste of time.
I cried tears. There were wasted tears.
Oh.
And now I'm crying tears again.
Yeah.
Of delirium, because now he's back. The
he
2018
back.
World Cup, which is already in the bag. Even more in the bag.
Yeah.
It's world is beautiful. You're back safe and sound from London.
Yeah, I went to the UK.
Worried about you. Worried about you.
Oh, I was worried about me too. Back from UK, back from the badlands of SAF, London. Rog, it was all over. Had a had some real life to deal with, but it was still
life.
It was still life.
The conveyor belt of life.
It was still a good trip, Rog.
It was. You said something fascinating to me, Davey.
Which was what?
On Sunday,
yeah,
you counted more NFL jerseys on the streets of London.
I did, than Premier League jerseys.
Astonishing.
Here's the thing, is that I think you sometimes get the impression from the United States that everyone in England is Premier League crazy. That, you know, just like you wake up at 7 in the morning or 4 in the morning on the West Coast and go and like watch all the games, that everyone in England is watching every game, fixated on everything. It's just not really like that. Most people completely ignore the Premier League in Britain. It's very difficult to watch. Lots of people don't have Sky. It's only on like satellite TV if you have satellite. My parents would never have a satellite. They'd never want to have something as vulgar stuck to the outside of their house.
It's decadent.
They can't go on the roof, Rod. They wouldn't want that. Or you've got to have BT. You've got to have some other way of getting it. It's sort of complicated.
And the Premier League owners and the football owners at large want the fans still in the old business
to come to the game on a Saturday afternoon.
So there's not as much live football on, bizarrely, in England as there is in America.
Yes.
A proper football country,
so lots
America.
Lots of people don't care about football or sport in general. Some people, spoke to a bunch of cab drivers this time, and they just said, it's too expensive for me to go to the football.
Only Americans can afford to go and watch Premier League football now.
And once it's too expensive for them to go to the football, they don't want to even watch it. They don't follow it anymore.
Feel for them.
Probably because the main reason they were going was to, like, you know, steam in with their keys against the away fans. But actually the football was just an inconvenient distraction.
We've had to go and find another place to have our teeth kicked in there.
But the other thing, and I was really reminded of this when I went to Craven Cottage, went and saw Fulham play Birmingham on Saturday with my godson. Fulham, it's a beautiful ground. It's not hoity-toity at all,
it
Rog,
is.
Fulham.
Imagine,
it really isn't.
Imagine Americans, 20,000, like, accountants just filling a football stadium. Like, when I go and watch Fulham, I am the hardest person in that football stand. I am like, people cower in my presence because I am like truly from the north and I am...
Fulham isn't really like that,
I just
Rog.
Reek of violence.
Fulham isn't really like that. Fulham is... You'd probably be the youngest person at Fulham. My point is, at a championship game, no one is thinking about or worrying about the Premier League. No one is thinking, oh, I wonder what the halftime score is from the Emirates. When they announce the halftime scores from around the country, they don't announce any Premier League scores, Rog. They announce other scores in the Championship. So we know how Ipswich are doing. We know how Burton Albion are doing. Yes, there are four historically professional divisions. We've now got Premier League, we've got Championship, we've got League One and League Two, and there are lots of other non-league teams. The Premier League, in some ways, is no bigger than the rest of those in terms of the hearts and minds and souls of fans. And people are very parochial. When their team is in the Championship, they only care about the Championship. When their team is in the Premier League, they're going to care about the Premier League. When they're down in League One, they care about League One. It's just not the be-all and end-all of football. And that was a really lovely reminder. I loved being at Fulham and not thinking about Premier League football.
Not thinking about Pep.
Not
thinking about
Jose or any of those things. Nobody there really cares.
He did say something lovely.
Yeah.
About this this return to the civility of Craven Cottage. You talked about the noise rolling over the stadium.
But it's one thing I was reminded of. This isn't just about Craven Cottage. I think it's about all football grounds in England. Is I was sitting at the side opposite the edge of the penalty area. And when Birmingham scored from the penalty spot. The sound, it took so long for the sound of the Birmingham fans to travel all the way down to the other end of the stadium. That huge delay from the noise of the away fans. And it was just something which I'd just forgotten how long it takes in one of these old football stadiums. It was wonderful.
It's like a crack of lightning that you see first. Yeah. And then you hear.
It was interesting. It was such a rainy day, Rog. It was a horrible, rainy, windy day. I was
beautiful.
Deep under the cover of a stand, at the Riverside stand, and yet got wetter than I've ever got at a football match because the rain howling in with the wind. And all around, almost every advertising hoarding in the place, no doubt to do with Shad Khan, is visitflorida.com. There's like no better place to advertise visitflorida.com than at Craven Cottage on a wet and windy. Even I wanted to go to Florida.
You just made me feel incredibly homesick for England.
Yeah.
The notion of horizontal rain. I miss.
Exactly. Getting wet under a stand.
I miss a good old-fashioned horizontal rain. David, while you were away, I've got some bad news for you.
Yeah.
Apple.
Yeah.
Tarnished.
Uh-huh.
Your favourite word.
Which is?
Courage.
I love that word.
Yeah, not so much
anymore.
What
did Apple do? I didn't see this story.
You know, they yanked the headphone jack from their new iPhone.
Yeah.
And they were asked to explain why they did it.
Yeah.
And a gentleman who may actually listen to this podcast, we have a lot of people at Apple that listen with terrible judgment to this podcast. And one of them, Philip Schiller. Hello, if you're listening.
Yeah.
You're the VP for marketing at Apple. Mm-hmm. Asked why they took the headphone jack out of the latest.
Yeah.
iPhone to go wireless headphone. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm going to explain it in one word. Courage. He said the courage to change.
Yeah.
I heard it, and we had thousands of you send this clip to us this week. I said, I love Apple. Even though I will admit, when I see someone wearing an Apple Watch, my gut response is to judge them. And then I try and repress that feeling. But courage is not a euphemism for stupidity, David.
No, but I do think that courage, though, is something that you say when you may just have made a stupid decision. And it will cover all eventualities. Like, we can't just say courage when we've made brilliant decisions. Well, that's not courage. Courage is standing by what you've done, even when it might turn out to be a massive, massive failure.
In that case, playing Jesse Lingard in a Manchester derby, incredibly courageous act by Jose Mourinho. Yeah. I feel they've taken our word, Dave. Mm. Apple have taken it and just sullied
it. It was Dan Rather, really.
Apple have done to courage what Jared did to Subway's footlongs. It's a dark...
Yeah, we know what happened there.
It's a dark, dark day. Yeah. Well, that's another mental picture that I'm now trying to repress.
Yeah.
Talking about sullying, David, we're also back on television.
Yeah,
live!
We're back. Are they letting us? Well, we haven't seen the ratings yet, Rog, but we think we're going to be back live on Friday. We were back live on
Monday. I'm hoping the ratings are terrible.
Well, they probably won't. Courage.
I mean, they're at 5:30.
Courage, Rog.
They're at 5:30. We're on no safety net.
Yeah.
America has to protect its children.
Yeah. We came out of the huge... I mean, look, it was a massive television event, Sunderland versus Everton.
Yeah.
I'm sure that will have broken international soccer ratings records.
And we knew that we had 12 people watching at least because the FCC stuck a dozen monitors they assigned them to our show.
They probably don't have Nielsen boxes.
Welcome, friends.
Yeah.
They're trying to work out whether nipple tingling actually breaks the code at 5:30. Yeah. I want to say a couple of quick thank yous. Mm-hmm. I want to thank our great friend, the master of the bulbous tie knot, Kyle Martina, for wearing his war pig tie to silently mark the occasion. I'm not sure if it was to encourage us or he was protesting the fact we're coming out. I also want to thank Rebecca Lowe. I don't think she gets enough thanks on this show.
No, she never gets mentioned by you.
Just before she threw to us live, what did she do, David?
She crossed her fingers, Rog.
And I imagined her uttering a silent prayer as she threw to us live.
Yeah.
And we feel the same, Rebecca. We don't know how we got this.
A prayer that the screen was going to go black and that we wouldn't be up there again. On behalf of everyone at NBC Sports.
Whose scheduling is clearly now run by Crap Cat Davo.
Yeah.
We're back on Friday for some new crap.
Yeah.
Fresh crap.
Yeah.
Serving up a fresh dose, a fresh helping of utter crap. 5:30 p.m.
Yeah.
After Chelsea's Diego Costa somehow does not get a second yellow and goes on to score a 90th minute winner that breaks Liverpool's
hearts. That's the trope. That's the trope.
That's when we'll be on, Davo.
Yeah. I must say, I've worked in television for a very long time. I think 27 years. I've been involved in a lot of live productions. I've got pretty good at live television over the years. I'm not sure.
You pride yourself on being somewhat of a professional, right?
I'm not sure I've ever been involved. With the greatest respect to our team, I'm not sure I've ever been involved in anything quite as frantic behind the scenes, and where I felt more like we were probably not going to make air.
Well, we have three producers. Even, Jen, on times, producer JW, producer Lex.
Yeah.
And I was only started to panic when I saw producer Lexi was running in like a gerbil, kind of like...
hamster wheel.
Just to keep the machinery that was broadcast us live. And there was one point where J-Dubs got out a fire extinguisher and just started blasting everything. Just, it's very disconcerting to try and broadcast live when he was just firing a fire extinguisher, a piece of machinery that producer Jem was trying to keep going with some bellows.
Yeah, we have an interesting director of our show. His name is Mance Sharp.
Mance, like Mance is
one
Mance
of my
Trader.
Favorite things about Mance is that Mance used to be a truck driver in Oklahoma. And I always regarded
his television skills.
I always regarded this as a very quaint story, imagining that this guy sort of came from being a truck driver in Oklahoma. Yep. And then after years of sort of starting at the bottom of training and sort of working his way up in television, he got to be a television director.
Yep.
I'm not sure there were ever years of training. I think he just got off a truck in New York and just told everybody he was a TV director. He's an interesting fellow.
He's
to
an
say
amazing
the least.
Fellow.
He's
I think
a great character.
If you chat to him, it becomes pretty clear that he sees his days as a truck driver in Oklahoma as the apex of his professional career. And sees it all
just he did some of his best television direction work in the truck.
Yeah.
My God.
He just.
That
I
was
mean,
chaos.
When we call for a clip live,
there's
just possibly, would you say a 1 in 3 chance that a clip comes up and then
I
a 1 in 6 chance that it's a 1 in.
I was thinking
27 right clip.
Didn't we? We ran a flash frame right at the beginning of the show of suddenly. Did I dream this or did Antonio Conte just appear in the screen just as I started to like do my mini plug at the top? It started there. By the way, that was several hours after I realized that it was chaos.
Yeah, but the reality is you get what you expect from Mance. And I don't know if you actually watch him push up the clip. He's got a very unusual way of pushing up the clips. He insists on pushing the button with his groin.
Yeah, exactly. And saying, hoo-ah! It was a very interesting thing. Okay, Rog, we've got a packed show. We're going to break down a Manchester derby rife with stakes, stars and egos. We're looking at you, Mark Clattenburg. The biggest story in the Premier League, Mark Clattenburg. That's exactly as he wants it. We duck and cover as Jurgen Klopp unleashes shock and awe football on defending champs Leicester City. Plus, a scratchy Chelsea, incisive all of a sudden Spurs, and a peak Arsenal-y Arsenal. We also talk Landon Donovan's second coming.
He is risen.
Okay, Rog, let's crack open the Guinness. Oh, summer's over. We've both got the Guinness draft, Rog.
To a weekend of wonder goals
in
which spectacular bicycle kicks just seem routine.
Yeah, exactly.
And a massive hype clash
that
lived up to the billing. Bournemouth and West Brom.
I thought you were going to say Sunderland and Everton, Rog.
We're not talking about that game.
Rog,
we're not going to damn them.
We are now 4/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces Rog to 2/19. It was a weekend of highlight reel goals, as you said, that would have made Skip to My Loo proud. By the end of it, only one team remains perfect, Rog.
You're perfect.
That was Manchester City, who visited Manchester United. They beat them 2-1. Pep Guardiola tactically backhands his arch nemesis, Jose Mourinho, to claim the 172nd Manchester derby in what was an absolutely electric, genuinely electric game of association football. First half goals from Kevin and Iheanacho gave City a lead that not even a Zlatan finish. And plenty of Claudio Bravo physical comedy, carrot top level physical comedy, Rog, could overcome. City stay top and hand United their first loss of the Mourinho era.
We were promised the apocalypse. But it actually turned into one of the most romantic rose ceremonies the Bachelor's ever seen. Oh. Love did conquer all, Davo, or for now anyway. But this rivalry, Davo, going into it, I mean, just the hype. It felt like the Yankees against the Red Sox if both teams existed within the parameters of one city, with Magic Johnson, Donnie Trump, Nick Denton, Notorious B.I.G. on one team, Larry Bird, Hills Clinton, Hulk Hogan and Tupac on the other, with Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton managing the team. And when Mourinho and Guardiola took the field...
I just don't see Nick Denton belonging in that group of people.
Oh, he's fantastic in front of the back four. Yeah, he loves being in front
we were
of the back
basketball.
Four. When Mourinho and Guardiola took that field, did their sideline battle for power handshake domination thing that football managers do. I felt a sudden pull of history, Davo. As if in 212 years' time, Manuel de Miranda's great, 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 great granddaughter would just make one enormous hit musical out of all of this.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Handshake was pretty epic, Roger. It started with the handshake, and that was fantastic. Pep entered, camera following him. Jose comes to meet him. I mean, he took an active decision. Remember last year, you know, the handshakes between him and Arsene?
Yeah.
Is that...
And him and Louis van Gaal, who could cup each other's cheeks more tenderly / violently.
Jose just went straight for Pep and decided to initiate the contact.
Yeah, it was jiu-jitsu against Aikido.
He just went direct to initiate. Went straight in for the sort of like the overhand handshake, Rog.
Yep.
But that little touch to the back of the neck, the cupping of the back of the neck on the outside, it may have been the only thing that Jose won that day, but he won the opening handshake.
Oh, and then the kind of dirty little... As they separated, the last cup of the year.
Yes, that cup.
Made it 2-0. Made it 2-0 to Jose. I've got to say, if you want to understand the great battle for men's kind of dynamic of power shaking, you've got to watch the Rabin Arafat kind of handshake on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
Or even watch, there was a great moment where Ehud Barak and Yasser Arafat were going through a door and they battled to see who could open the door for the other and appear more dominant and usher the other one through and lead to a standoff.
Mm.
These are... where geopolitical battles are won and lost. It's all in the handshake,
but not games of football.
No. Because once the handshake had been dispensed with, I figure 95% of football fans around the world were shocked to find out that neither Mourinho or Guardiola would actually be playing in that game of football, Davy.
Yeah.
And it all got down to the players. There had been so much written about this game before kickoff. One of the most fascinating pieces I read was written by a guy, Alex Hess. He said, nowadays, the first priority for football club juggernauts is not to get people through the turnstiles, but to get them watching, talking, clicking. And he points in the article to the United hogging headlines by dispatching bank trucks in return for Zlatan and Paul Pogba, combined Twitter followers, 6.77 million, and smashing the transfer record in the process. And his point is, the clubs care secondarily about tactical issues. They're more interested right now in entertainment, media and social media. Those are the real focus. And this article was so prescient in light of all that unfurled in the next 90 kind of exhilarating minutes, David. They're no longer in the sports business. They're just purely in the entertainment buzz-building business.
Oh, look, in the week that Manchester United became the first Premier League team to announce revenues of 500 million plus, Rog, this is serious business. Interesting, Rog, I felt, looking at the Man United team sheet. Obviously, Aguero was out for Man City. Looking at the team sheet, Mkhitaryan handed a home start in a massive, massive game. Jesse Lingard coming in. And then on the other end, Claudio Bravo is going to be the debutant in a Manchester derby, Rog, at the other end for Man City.
Yeah, I mean, the whole pre-game conversation was, would Rashford play? Would he not play? Mourinho took advantage of the confusion, going completely left field, throwing in Lingard, Martial, Mata, making way for those gents. And from the off, Davo, it was nipple-tingling, intoxicating, muscular affair. United struggled to keep possession. Poor old Mkhitaryan unable to find a foothold. Zlatan seemed desperate to show he wasn't trying too hard whilst trying too hard. And Rooney just suffocating in the lack of space on the field. There was really only one team in the early going that had a cohesive idea, a tactical game plan, and that was City. Just moved the ball so quickly through their sharp-edged options, Raz, De Bruyne, Iheanacho, twisting, stretching, testing United's defensive integrity, chasing and harrying for the ball back when they're out of possession. Fernandinho seemed to be at the end of every loose ball reclaiming it for City.
Yeah, and the player you're not even mentioning, because he was barely visible, Rog, was Paul Pogba. Not even there. You know, Pogba and Fellaini massively outmanned in midfield in that formation that Mourinho was playing, whatever that was. And certainly Pep seemed to have the tactical upper hand.
United, they'd enter this game with a perfect record, but that was born of wins against Bournemouth, Southampton and Hull. Just less affair. And the first time this season they come up against a cohesive, intelligent 11, they seemed, it wasn't that they were just less than the sum of their parts. They just seemed to be parts. Pogba trotting round out of position as if he'd only been hired as Manchester's VP for social media and digital marketing, shocked to find himself actually on the playing field, and his just complete lack of tactical discipline. Poor Fellaini cruelly exposes a great stat doing the rounds that the number of haircuts Pogba's unfurled in a Manchester United jersey outstrips the number of goals and assists that he's created. And you compare what he offered in this game to the consistently undersung maestro David Silva, who's not only passed with perfection, but tackled and won loose balls under Pep Guardiola. And you start to begin to understand why United are outpunched. Silva, 5'7", proof again that intelligence and tactical prowess will always allow you to outpunch hulking opponents.
Yeah, and tactically, Pep set up very, very differently. It wasn't sucking in his fullbacks inside again. He tried all sorts of things. And the goal, when it came, came from long ball football, Rog.
Classic Route 1 football. Was Pep's philosophy reshaping English football, or was English football reshaping Pep's philosophy?
Yeah, we have no idea. Kolarov, Claudio Bravo starts it off at the back. Kolarov hits, I think, a good 70-yarder, Rog. Iheanacho wins it in the air. I'd not thought of him as an aerially dominant player, but he clearly is. Flicks it on. Kevin, oh, fantastic move. Skins Daily Blint. And as you said yesterday on the show, gave David De Gea the eyes.
The eyes. He gave him the eyes.
And just slots it into the corner.
That goal came from the fact that United didn't know whether to press or not to press when Kolarov had the ball at the back, and City just took complete advantage of the tactical wreckage. And the Serbs' long bomb created complete and utter panic. Once it dropped to De Bruyne, gingers versus man buns. Gingers win that battle every time, Dave. That Blint man bun, by the way. My five-year-old refers to Blint as Tiny Ibrahimovic. And De Bruyne, in a game of so many subplots, the fact that he'd been discarded by Mourinho from Chelsea in January 2014 had been buried way below the fold.
Yeah.
But he's had the mental strength to shake off adversity, climb back to the pinnacle. Even though few elite predators have the body language like he does of a lurking, uncomfortable 13-year-old in the early throes of puberty, but he's been involved now in 32 goals in 46 appearances for City, scoring 17, assisting 15. Remarkable for a ginge.
I think even for the most pro-Jose Mourinho of Chelsea fans, the discarding of Kevin De Bruyne is an even bigger mystery than the discarding of Romelu Lukaku, Rog. Because De Bruyne looked amazing every time he played for Chelsea, or mainly in pre-season, by the way, and just never, ever was given a chance. You can say that Romelu was given a chance and didn't always blow you away in a Chelsea jersey. Then he came good later on. De Bruyne was good every time he played and was never given a chance.
Can you think of a ging that Mourinho has trusted?
You know, that's a great question.
I think we're onto something.
Yeah, he's an anti-ginger.
Yeah, they all are, David, but they all are. United's confusion, symbolised by the moment Wayne Rooney ran into Pep Guardiola in the technical area, bull-on-bull violence.
Yeah, that was interesting. When I watched it live, I thought that Rooney was the aggressor, but when they played the replay, you realise that Pep completely attempted a Meadowlark Lemon ball fake on Rooney. He sucked him in. He sucked him in to go and get the ball as though I'm handing you the ball, and then pulled it away. And he made Rooney look like the villain. Rooney was just trying to get back into the game.
If watch this moment with producer J-Dub. I've only watched it 127 times. And if you break it down, you can look at the range of emotions Pep goes through in the 6 seconds of the incident. You gain a glimpse, I think, by doing this, of the psychological layers that he's fronting in the early days of his English Premier League odyssey. His first instinct, Dave, is to show aggression. No quarter given. I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Wayne Rooney. And then he morphs into impudence and trickery, demonstrating the defiance he wants his team to show on the field. And then it clicks into his mind suddenly as he starts thinking and not just reacting instinctually. Hang on. I'm meant to be the nice guy in this Mourinho-La Def feud. And he suddenly just breaks into a grin out of nowhere. And as you pointed out, grabs the retreating confused Rooney by the Rooney paw.
The grimy, sweaty Rooney paw.
And shakes it.
Probably a fairly hairy paw as well.
He shakes it. I think he uses wax strips to kind of get that. To get that thicket.
Yeah.
To get that
and thicket
off
the
paw.
And then he puts it on his head. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, he is. Pep in that moment, because I've always liked.
I might do that.
I've always liked Pep. But in that moment, I realised, oh my God, like the nice guy is an absolute bastard. Yeah, the nice guy's all an act.
And he does that smile. It is an act.
It's that guy you meet at a bar who like tries to break up the fight but gets in a punch at the same time.
It's all mates here, all fairs in love and sport. Right, Wayne? Right, Wayne? And you always say, Dave, context is everything. Can you imagine the furore if Jose had done the same thing, which he has in the past. He did it to Liverpool.
Yeah, and also if it wasn't Rooney he was doing it to. Yeah, it was incredible.
Talking about Jose.
Yeah.
He had Marcus Rashford warming up on the sideline inside 24 minutes.
Yeah.
Mourinho would later say, I didn't yank my players off then and there because I didn't want to embarrass them. Even though it's something he's done a number of times before, famously pulled off Sean Wright Phillips and Joe Cole after 26 minutes at Chelsea.
Yeah, well, because he did want to embarrass them.
He'll probably wish he had done so here, because City soon doubled their lead.
Kevin, again, we got to talk to the people at Togo, Rog, because I don't think they count the rebound off the post as an assist. But an amazing...
They're anti-Ginga too.
Nor is it a shot on goal, Rog, nor is it a shot on target. And as we've discussed before, a shot that hits the post, phew. That's better than one that's saved by the goalkeeper in the corner.
You have to almost try harder.
Yeah, it's very, very true. It's hard to hit the post. He cuts in from the right with his left foot, hits it right against the post, and Iheanacho is there for clean-up.
Alone with great reflexes to stab the ball home, Man City's youngest Premier League scorer in a derby game, 19 years, 343 days. This man is so clutch.
Yeah.
To me, he's like the Nigerian Jimmy Garoppolo. Just... no other player who's as economical as him in the Premier League. 9 goals from just 13 shots on target in his young Premier League career. And defensively, United, who remember had only conceded once going into this game, Davo, all season, suddenly looking absolutely shambolic. And at this point, you're thinking, how many is City going to score? Could this be like the 6-1 Balotelli, why always me, redux?
Yeah,
but then United found their way back into the game thanks to Claudio Bravo.
I would say that across
the
entire
power of narrative,
across the entire field, you were looking at those individual matchups, thinking City are winning every single one. But the only one that you didn't feel so good about was Claudio Bravo. Even in the first half, when he hadn't really made a mistake, he just seemed to dwell a little long on the ball. Didn't seem to be positionally as astute as you would expect a goalkeeper of his caliber to be. And you know, almost on the stroke of halftime, Rog, Rooney knocks one into the box, a pretty good ball, but Claudio Bravo comes about a mile to try and gather it, as though he has to prove his Premier League manhood, as though he's got to prove that he can come out of his area, he can deal with the aerial ball. And
when you go that far out,
yeah,
what do you have to do, David?
You've got
to
get
you
the gotta ball.
You've got to get it.
You've got to get it.
You've got
to
be yours. You've got to get it. He didn't get it.
No, he didn't get it at all.
And the ball dropped at the feet of
Kung Fu Zlatan.
Yeah, and he just... Swedish Chuck Norris just flung his foot, jumping, spinning, hook kick style.
Yeah, I saw a nunchuck go in there somewhere as well, Rod. It was an amazing, amazing goal.
The couple of ninja stars that flashed towards the goal.
Amazing stuff.
And it was 1-0. And it is fascinating. I mean, Pep wanted a goalkeeper who's good with his feet. Surely football basics demand you also feel one who's good with their hands.
And arms, maybe.
At Schlesklek tweeted us, Bravo reminds me of a field player filling in at keeper for a rec team whose goalie didn't show up. At Josh Bagosh, Bravo, Gunnar Hart, which turned out to be so true, we should say, because if you looked at Joe Hart in his reek-like state, imprisoned in the dread fort of Torino at the weekend, he too misfired.
Yeah, he also failed to gather a cross, Rich.
First of all, the official team sheet for the game had his name down as John Hart, the Manchester City Witness Protection Programme in full effect.
Clearly,
nothing
Torino.
To do with us,
clearly
John Hart.
Clearly, Torino bought the wrong player.
And he punched the ball towards an opposing striker,
leaving
him to sweep the ball home in a similar. He also conceded the winner via a penalty, which wasn't his fault, but he had tried to ice the kick-up by wambling around behind the goal before the penalty.
Yeah, so good.
I'm going to show him. John Hart's going to show him. John Hart's going to show him. The honest truth is, I think both John Hart and Claudio Bravo's debut show this. Being a starting goalkeeper, it's not just about confidence and athletic ability. It's about communication with your back four. And that relationship takes more than one training session on the Thursday before a game. Pep selecting Bravo in the crucible of that Manchester derby. I feel for Bravo. It's the worst decision since Apple did get rid of that headphone jack, David. English football. God, you always said it's so hard to adjust to physically for La Liga goalkeepers.
Yeah. No, it's very, very hard.
Remember David De Gea when he came in?
Well, David De Gea, look at Courtois, still struggling to adjust to Premier League football. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. David De Gea, flappy hands, as he was called by Piers Morgan.
His first dozen games completely floundered. Not everyone finds it the transition as effortless as like Bradley Guzan. Yeah. David De Gea, I mean, who was routinely outstanding in this game, absolutely had a savage baptism and has ended up being the outstanding goalkeeper in the league. Mm. But I have to say, it was a strategic mistake for Pep to just plop in Bravo in the cauldron. of this game, and suddenly United came to life. The game stretched. Poor old Bravo seemed to have post-traumatic stress disorder. Coughed up the ball, only for Zlatan to roll the ball at the net instead of thrashing it home. Every time the cameras focused on Bravo's just, oh, the anxiety filling his poor face. I just knew he was a man experiencing the kind of emotions only known to Barb as she was stranded in the upside down. Big changes, second half, Rashford, Herrera on. Immediate impact.
Yeah, just a minute after he comes on, he turns Sanya. I mean, it was like a magic trick, Rog. It was wonderful. Speed of foot and thought. Breaks down the left wing, puts in a really good ball to Zlatan. A ball that, difficult, being defended, but you just thought Zlatan would get on the end of it.
If it was Ligue 1.
Yeah, very, very true. If he needed to throw a few more nunchucks, Rog.
By the way, he could have had a hat trick, Zlatan.
Yeah.
And he conspired to turn a Rashford goal later into an offside. Overruling, more Bravo, sliding two-footed desperately into Wayne Rooney, who was charging around at that point like Jake LaMotta in the last scenes of Raging Bull. You can't make that tackle on the football field, David.
I was amazed when I followed this on Twitter. How many people said, "Oh no, it wasn't a foul. It wasn't a penalty." To me, that was a clear foul, a clear penalty, and a clear sending off. There's no doubt about it.
Well, the only person whose decision mattered was smug refereeing's Mark Clattenburg.
Oh, yeah. And he waved play on. He was the real star there.
Yeah, at Soren Het tweeted us in and said, "I woke up early this morning to watch Mark Clattenburg referee and was pleasantly surprised to find there was a Manchester derby happening at the time."
That's very true. That's exactly what Mark Clattenburg is intending.
Oh, to me, David, it was a red card. City should have been down to 10 men, and the only reason it wasn't given, I think.
It was Wayne Rooney.
It could have been that. I think Clattenburg just felt total pity at this point for Claudio Bravo. Because from a human perspective, it was just so hard to watch a man who's won La Liga titles and the Copa America just turn to spaghetti. From a human perspective, it was absolutely brutal. City tried to give him some protection, throwing on Fernando to sit in front of the back four. Oddly, though, Guardiola didn't try and shut the game down. Kevin De Bruyne kept charging forward looking for the knockout punch, playing like a man who believes that you actually do get more fantasy points for hitting the post. At the Will Cole tweeted us to say, "Kevin De Bruyne, finally the hero the SPF 50 community has been praying for."
Yeah, so there is... that's so good. There is certainly truth that Man United played a lot better in the second half. The adjustments stopped Man City from playing the kind of football they had done in the first half. The substitutions not only seemed to be man for man better ideas, but some of the other players who hadn't really showed up in the first half performed better.
Crazy ending to the game. Final minute, just emotionally, United laid siege to City's goal, or attempted to. Desperate to test Bravo. Felt United were in the ascendancy, City grimly holding on.
Yeah.
And then the final whistle blows. The mood just instantly flips. United players dropped to their knees. City stars started to celebrate. They'd been under the cosh. But then you see Alexander Kolarov barking at the moon like a mad dog in frenzied delight. And you realise it was over. Jose Mourinho has now won just 3 of his 17 meetings with arch rival slash lover Pep Guardiola. He admitted post-game he was, quote, "disappointed with some really poor individual performances. Some of my players didn't give me what I wanted. Do your impression for me."
"Yes, some of my players did not give me what I wanted."
And then half-heartedly admitted the tactical decisions were his.
"Therefore, it is my fault. I am the manager. It was my fault. It was my choice." "It's my choice."
Oh, for City, we've got Guardiola, sang the giddy fans as Pep strolled around the field, trying to mask his unbelievable relief and giddy joy.
Yeah, slapping all of his young players, Rog.
That's how you mask your relief, as many of his poor young charges.
Slapping them hard as well.
Really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, Klopp-style hard.
Yeah.
3 points for City, one for every tooth that Kolarov has left. How do you think about this? Because to me, Dave, City have played the best football of any team this season.
Yeah.
But they seem to only be able to do it in half an hour spells like they did in their victory against West Ham. They look so dominant, but then seem to run out of coins to put in the gas meter.
Look, David Deal, who was our guest on Men in Blazers live show.
Double D.
Yesterday, Double D, former New York Giants offensive lineman. And we were talking about the opening weekend of the NFL season with him after the show. And he said, "Here's the reality. None of these teams are ready. No one is ready." And I still think these Premier League squads four games in, Champions League has just started. They might have played like a, you know, one capital, one game or whatever it's called now. Doesn't actually have a sponsor. It's amazing. It's now the English Football League Trophy.
We should sponsor it.
We should, the men in places.
Crap Cat Cup.
A crap sponsor for a crap trophy.
These
teams are still finding themselves. And it's, you know, I imagine like after the second international break, which is going to interrupt any dynamic
after
flow.
After the second wave, a black dog has cloaked me in its misery.
Yeah, then we'll start to know a little bit more about these teams.
And that is what fascinated me about this game, David, because you couldn't take your eyes off it. Yet, to your point, these two teams are going to gel and evolve. And my conclusion, and it, as I
said... Well, Jose said it came too early. But it's back. The Manchester derby is back, Rog.
As I remember the emotions I felt at that final whistle and hear you now, David, my nipples, they do tingle. Yeah. It makes me realise we're in the Premier League title race for the ages with the two stuttering powerhouses stuttering no more, David. They've gotten their groove back. And then some. Even United fans, once the emotion of the Derby Day defeat amps down a little bit, even they will know they've got so much more to feel optimistic about right now than at any other point since Sir Alex departed.
Very, very true, Rog.
One quick note, David.
Yeah.
I was shocked by the number of GFOPs who witnessed the game in person.
Huh.
Travelled to Manchester. Beautiful letter we got from Jeremy Rawley about his experience.
Yes, Jeremy writes, one of my best mates magically acquired tickets to the Manchester Derby on Thursday. I doubt it was magic, actually, Jeremy. Needless to say, I immediately booked airfare from DC to Manchester. I'm sorry. After the game, having listened to your podcast, we knew there was only one place in Manchester to eat to pay proper respect to LVG. Wings! Upon entering the restaurant, we noticed two terracotta warrior statues at the entrance. We started taking photographs with them, and the front of house manager noticed us. We then asked for a table for dinner. He said that they were completely booked for tonight. This was at approximately 5 p.m., and the place was basically empty. He said it would be unfair to seat us because people had made reservations weeks, days, hours ago. That's the wrong order. We inquired about making reservations, and he just kept thanking us and ushered us to leave, even though all of the tables in the restaurant were empty. As we were leaving, we noticed that they have a ton of autographed dinner plates. We saw a John Stones and a Rojo plate. Sadly, we didn't have time to find the LVG plate. That was from Jeremy Wally and his friend, Nate Slevin.
God, I've got a new...
Oh, that's so disappointing.
I've got a new life goal, David.
I must say, we've been trying, we should say, to get in touch with the people at Wings, and they haven't returned our messages for the last 2.5 months.
They've been ghosting J-Dubs and Lexi.
Yeah.
I'll just say, Jeremy and Nate, we're sorry. Remember, even Moses didn't make it into the promised land.
Victor Moses.
But I do, thinking about that story.
Yeah.
I wonder where the wings deliver, David. We should get them to send some scallion pancakes to the crap part of Soho.
Yeah.
If you're in Manchester and you go to Wings, GFOPs, tell us your story. Hashtag Wings stories.
Yeah.
And now I've got a new life goal, David.
Yeah.
I want to have
to get a table at Wings.
Well, I'd like my own autographed dinner plate up at Wings.
You got to get a table first, Rog. You got to get a table first.
But they're all booked weeks, days, hours ago.
Yeah, so true.
I think whoever that maitre d' is at Wings may end up being the next campaign manager of the Trump campaign by the sound of things.
Yeah, no, it's very, very good. Okay, Rog, another very poor, optimistic and happy fan base right now, Rog. They're feeling very positive. Liverpool 4, Leicester 1. Jurgen Klopp turns the heavy metal football amps to 11 and blows the defending champs away in Liverpool's first home game of the season.
Brad Kottoffel.
Roberto Firmino brace. And a goal apiece from Mane and Adam Lallana, who I like to call Chlalana. A massive and momentum building.
And momentous.
Yes.
Win.
And saliva inspiring win.
But the big story, David, before kickoff, Liverpool opening their spanking new $190 million main stand. Oh, it's hulking.
Mm.
It's beautiful. Looks like Lenny Riefenstahl was somehow involved in the architectural oversight. The 8,500 seat extra capacity. It's been talked about for 17 years. So real credit to American owners FSG for actually pulling it off. Huge boost for both club and City, as it's projected to bring in up to $40 million a year or more to close the gap between the Reds and the likes of United and Arsenal with their mega stadiums. As we said on the show, if only the new stand could play left back, all of Liverpool's problems would be solved, David.
It's very, very true.
Into town come defending champions, Leicester. Celebrations ensue.
Leicester, just not quite the team we'd seen before.
I mean, they're not what they used to be, or maybe we should say they are what they used to be before last season, which is pretty crap.
Yeah, pretty crap, and without N'Golo Kanté, who made them all look pretty good last season.
Yeah, I mean, that Kanté-sized hole in front of the back four is just a gaping flesh wound. Drinkwater, in particular, is back to looking incredibly average in his absence. Kanté, you realise, is the ultimate collective multiplier who makes all those around him look better and better, and how he was missed in this game, because Liverpool came at Leicester in wave after wave.
Yeah, Firmino and Lallana were outstanding in this game. Rog Firmino opened the scoring in the 13th minute.
Oh, a fantastic team goal made by movement, cunning, motion, befuddling the cumbersome once more Morgan and Huth. Derided left-back James Milner had the pass of a visionary seer, and in came Firmino with the first touch of an ancient Chinese warrior Mulan to make space and finish with aplomb.
Yeah, the second goal was the most bizarre of the day, Rog. It was a Daniel Sturridge genuine assist.
Intentional.
It was an intentional assist, Rog, to Sadio Mane.
Old Sturridge would have shot. Yeah. New Sturridge tearing in from the right, flicked it with his heel to the excellent, ceaseless menace Mane, and he banked it in off a stranded, exposed Schmeichel. Q Klopp's glasses tumbling to the floor for the second time this season. I've never encountered a man whose glasses fall off more than Jurgen Klopp. The amount of times they fall off, you'd think you would just like walk around New York City and see glasses just constantly be falling off people who wear them's faces.
Yeah,
David.
Occasionally my glasses fall off when I wear them on my head.
Yeah.
And occasionally, you know, I find my reading glasses will slip down the end of my nose.
Very
and you've
occasionally.
You've got to push them back with your finger in the middle. But I've never seen glasses fall off.
Here's my theory.
Okay, go.
It's all intentional. Fill the stadium with life! Jurgen ordered Liverpool fans entering the new stand before the game. And what I realise is, his punching the air, my glasses are falling off antics. They're a purposeful strategy to whip up the fans, create a trinity between his team, their fan base, and just a reinforcing effect in which he's just the total conductor.
Yeah. It's like the vicar in one of those sort of West End broad comedy plays, Rog, who's constantly losing his trousers. when did you last see your trousers?
Benny
I think
Hill
was an actual play that used to play in London when I was younger.
Leicester got a bizarre lifeline from Lucas Lever.
Oh, my God, what was that? Lots of defences of Lucas Lever on Twitter, most notably by our great friend John Green. But a suicidal back pass, Rog, completely exposed his entire team, most notably his keeper. And Jamie Vardy's there to knock it in.
Yeah, the kind of law you don't break from the age of five onwards, never pass the ball across the face of your own goal, especially when the world's most athletic feral rat is there to pounce. And that goal was mood-changing. If you've ever been to a bris, a circumcision, they're very odd events because they all start so joyful, like a wedding, and then the knife flashes out and it suddenly feels like a funeral. I mean, suddenly Liverpool wobbled. Mignolet wandered out for a cross he shouldn't have come for and was left flapping as Robert Huth cracked the ball off the bar. And you knew when this second half began, the game could have gone anywhere. Could have been 5-1, 6-1 Liverpool. Or it could have been 4-2 to Leicester. Both these teams are so fickle and inconsistent. It turned out closer to the former. Simon Mignolet actually took a blow to the face and then started to play like a real-life Scott Sterling. Turns out that woozy, light-headed Simon Mignolet is the best kind of Simon Mignolet. Lallana then, David, put the game away. You love that goal.
Oh, it's a fantastic, fantastic goal, Rog. He just... for a guy who for so long has just been so ineffective at scoring, he suddenly scores one in England. Not his greatest finish, but that seems to have awoken him, Rog, his first England goal. This finish ka-trunk right into the corner.
Yeah, Chairman Mao always used to urge his ping-pong players to hit the ball as if it was the severed head of capitalist enemies. And that's what I imagine him like, just thinking the ball was Brendan Rodgers' head.
Yeah.
As he absolutely smashed it. Four goals all of last season for Lallana, two already this. And you can see a huge difference in his confidence and belief. If you actually watch the goal, you can see Lallana decides to shoot the ball long before it ever comes to him. The idea forms the second Wijnaldum gets the ball alongside him. The rest is just anticipation and execution. Firmino added a late garbage time clincher. And not Chris Wackall says, this isn't your very slightly older brother's Leicester City.
Yeah.
One win in four for Ranieri's team, David. Unfortunately, it might well be your slightly older brother's Leicester City.
Yeah, I'm waiting for all those stats of like the worst start to any Premier League season by defending champions since, oh, Chelsea in 2015.
I mean, J-Dubs keeps telling me the fans won't care. They're playing this season with house money. Ranieri's challenging.
Don't care if they're in danger of being relegated.
Yeah, you'll always have your memories. No one will take that away from you. But he asked his players to show a, quote, good reaction in the Champions League. This week, the Leicester joyful, wonderful invasion of Europe begins with a trip to Bruges. I interviewed Arsene Wenger for a documentary that's going to air on NBCN on October the 1st. And he said to me, he said, a good manager really only shows himself in the wake of a loss. Mm. A good manager makes sure one loss doesn't become two and two become three, because then the manager leads his team into what he calls, and Arsene Wenger pauses for breath and goes, super crisis. I love that notion. I said to him, Arsene, my whole life has been super crisis. But you look at Leicester, Burnley, Chelsea, Manchester United now await. But for Liverpool, this was the giddy kind of win that brings back the dreamers, Dave. Everything feels possible ahead of the massive test this Friday. Liverpool against Chelsea. Going to be fascinating to see if Klopp sticks with the front three and go all out against Conte.
Yeah, quickly on Leicester. There are CEOs who are very good at managing businesses that are growing. CEOs who manage growth. There are CEOs who are very good at managing declining businesses. And usually the two can't do the other job. The business world is full of people who were great as their companies were growing, but the second that the companies struggle, they can't manage those businesses at all. We'll see how Ranieri can do at Leicester this season. Liverpool, when they play football like that, it makes you forget about the 2-0 loss to Burnley. And I actually think that Friday's game against Chelsea is going to really tell us a lot about how good Liverpool can actually be this season, and also where Chelsea actually are, despite all the hype. Most of that hype coming from you, Rog. Okay. Moving.
You're on to me, Dave.
Yeah, pretty much. I was totally on to you. You keep on saying, I think they're going to win. And every time we predict a game.
I emailed you at the weekend.
I know, but then you predict. We eat the pies yesterday, and you're like, oh, yeah, Liverpool are going to win it 2-1. It's very interesting. Roger, I still think they're going to win the title. Roger emails me.
I did.
Okay, nice segue to Chelsea. Rog, Swansea 2, Chelsea 2. Antonio Conte's crew dropped their first points of the season at the Liberty Stadium. It was a game played in three acts. Act one, Chelsea dominance. Act two, Chelsea implosion. And act three, the ever-predictable Diego Costa late equaliser after, some say, mainly Rog, he should have been sent off. Chelsea stay second, but slip 2 points behind Manchester City.
And the perfect start to the season takes a dent. But this game was all about the snarling, rutting, throbbing guerrilla war operated behind enemy lines. That is Diego Costa.
One-man army.
Time in
one-man special force army.
I imagine he grew up, and I'm making this up because I have no factual basis for this, but why am I giving that caveat this deep into the pod?
Yeah.
I bet you he grew up under a poster of John Rambo.
Maybe, in that tiny little town.
And he didn't like Rambo 2. He was just fully into Rambo 1. I mean, in this game, for the third time in four games, he should have, could have gotten a second yellow card before staying on the field and grabbing the game-changing goal. Watching him battle all comers, Dave, it was. I said this to you yesterday. It was like watching a Scorsese reboot of The Taxi Driver. Diego Costa being Travis Bickle in cleats. You're talking to me, Jordi Amat? Are you talking to me? And he is so hard to play against, Dave.
Yeah.
Because he's even harder to referee. He's like a Matthew Barnaby-style pest. He's an instigator who initiates contact and then just flings himself to the ground.
Look, he's always on the edge. Look, in a weekend where that was not a foul from Leroy Fair on Gary Cahill, in a weekend where Claudio Bravo is not sent off for that challenge on Wayne Rooney, let's face it, Costa's going down outside the penalty area from a lower body challenge from the keeper. It just is, it's always on a line. That is the genius of Costa. Nearly everything he does is on a line. And he does get hacked to bits by the opposition for the entire game. He takes a lot as well as gives it. But whatever you think about him, whatever you say about him, however much you hate him, however much you love him,
The undeniable fact about Diego Costa, he is living, breathing entertainment. He is so compelling. You just cannot take your eyes off him.
And he's
on a football
always
field.
The story. Whether always. He plays well or plays badly, whether he scores or doesn't score, he always finds a way to make himself the centre of attention.
Yeah.
At Binky Marsh 29 actually emailed us in with the best, I think, rational explanation for Costa. He said, I feel bad for Costa. He clearly suffers from dysesthesia. Dysesthesia being an unusual and frankly frightening physical disorder, nerve problems. The act of touching a part of the body causes just unpleasant sensations such as pain, burning, or tingling. Binky Marsh tweets in, it must feel like knives or fire any time someone touches his legs.
Yeah, it's poor very guy. It's very tough. And from a guy who actually knows real pain, he does get hacked as well, but he can't tell the difference between... He actually reacts much better when he gets really, really heavily fouled than when he gets barely touched at all.
It was compelling stuff. Odd game though, Dave. Swansea at the outset, it just seemed like this would be as large a mismatch as CM Punk against Mickey Gold. Swansea had little fight. Their strategy seemed to be give it to Guilfi, hope Guilfi makes some crap happen. But he and Llorente lacked the pace to really threaten Chelsea. Their three at the back were unable to seize any of the three chances they had to clear, and Costa punished them for his third of the season and his six against Swansea in just four games. It could have been long range for him.
And this is like Chelsea playing like, you know, Arsenal over the last few years. You know, they were all over Swansea. Chelsea, dominant, but it doesn't matter. And this team has suddenly gone from being the mentally toughest team in football to the mentally weakest team in football. I have a theory on it, Rog, as to why. This is just a team of soloists. They do not have a conductor. There is no conductor of this team. When Fabregas is not playing, Fabregas is not fit, Fabregas is out of favour, Fabregas is just... you know, a wanker. I don't know what it is, but there's some issue with Fabregas. There is no orchestra leader. There isn't even a first violinist. This is just a team of soloists, Rog. Oh,
there is a conductor coming though, David.
Who is the conductor?
David Luiz.
Yeah.
Slightly mental one, who I imagine just huffs the whippets the whole time.
He's the insane person banging the timpanis, Rog. He's full on percussion. David Luiz.
I will say about talking about bonkers stuff, a lot of the media at the game made the point. It was Costa's performance that riled the Swansea fans, keeping them interested in the game and encouraging their team to force their way back into it against all the odds, Davo, which I do find fascinating.
It's fascinating. Yeah, but it does sort of overstate which fans love and media love is their own importance in deciding games when it's actually decided by the players on the field. And there is truth.
Are you trying to say that wanker signs have no effect whatsoever on world politics?
There is some truth that the way that opposing players behave can inspire the opposition to go and play harder and go and do more. But remember, Diego Costa, they won the Premier League title with him behaving. It's not like he's suddenly devolved to this place. He is behaving in exactly the same way that he won in Atletico Madrid, that he's won with Chelsea before. And yes, maybe in some games this is going to happen. But you get the best out of Diego Costa when he is aggravated and super involved like this as well.
Well, he kept frittering away opportunities. And once Swansea moved to four at the back, the game just flipped within the span of 2 minutes and 10 seconds. Out of nothing, Guilfi brought down by a wild swing from the evaporating confidence that is Courtois.
Oh, evaporating. I mean, I'm not quite sure when it was at its height. This was sort of out of nothing. A long ball from the back, the ball cut to the inside. It just felt that there are so many ways for Courtois to reach that ball. Most notably with the things on the end of his arms, his hands. He was in the penalty area and he attempted to make a challenge with his feet.
We want goalies that are good with their feet now, David.
He has feet of clay, but it's in the penalty area. The great advantage that a keeper has is his ability to use his hands when the opposing player can only use his feet.
Hands get you sent to Torino in this modern game, Davo. Guilfi converted the penalty.
Yeah.
And then before we knew it, Fur charging into Cahill. I mean, I'll say Cahill did bring this on himself by allowing himself to be closed down so casually. You could immediately see...
By having legs.
you could immediately see David Luiz's influence has already been evident in training.
Yeah.
But even I, Dave, I don't think Cahill surrendered his right not to be fouled.
Of course not. I mean, there were just... He was not only fouled in one leg, he was kicked in both legs, and there was no contact with the ball until after both legs had been taken out from under him. Having said that, it is Gary Cahill, and he just has the stature of someone who you quite enjoy watching get kicked in the legs. Chelsea, it was their own fault. It was their own fault. They were 2-1 down, having allowed Swansea to get back into the game.
I did love for this goal how Fur lumbered on and popped the ball, Courtois and Cahill, into the back of the net at the end of it. Costa then just continued his descent into darkness. You hinted about it earlier. There was a moment when he charged in on Fabianski, and instead of trying to score when his team needed a goal, and the fact that he's the elite striker, he decided to initiate contact and just fall over. Chance gone.
I'm not sure I see this challenge quite the way you see it. He knocked the ball quite a long way away from himself. I'm not sure that he could reach it for an attempt.
But then
to
you
score.
See him veer into the goalkeeper.
Well, he is moving at a speed that you or I have never moved at that point, Roger. In slow motion, it's a little bit easier to see
fair.
The initiation
That's
of the contact.
That's a fair point.
Having said that, all I would say is, in the annals of Costa violations, this one was a very, very minor one, and yet the goal he scored was right up there with the very best of them.
In the 81st minute.
Yes. Ivanovic, Rog, in the area, comes in, shoots, ball rebounds to Costa. He's already scored one almost from outside the area. Now he puts one in with a bicycle kick. He couldn't do that at £245, which he came in at the beginning of last season.
He took to the air like a man who'd been watching Zlatan videos for the past week. The goal was a reminder that Diego Costa is the good, the bad, the ugly, embodied in one human being. He really is, Davo, the Premier League's most clinical asshole. Bad news for Chelsea fans, great news for lovers of absolutely cannot take your eyes off catastrophic yet sizzling football. John Terry limped off the field at the end of the game with ankle ligament damage. Could be out for 10 days.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Davo?
Oh, David Luiz.
The second coming.
Yeah.
A player whose commitment to Chelsea has always outstripped his commitment to actually defending.
Yeah, I wonder. He might, of course, not play David Luiz as centre-back. He might move Ivanovic in to go and have him play centre-back. But one hopes, for narrative reasons, that it's going to be Luiz partnering Cahill in the centre of defence against Liverpool this Friday. And more for fans of narrative, Rog. Stoke 0, Tottenham 4. They're back. The Potters proved to be that greasy bacon, egg and cheese that gets Spurs over their early season hangover. 2 goals from Son, 1 from Dele Alli, and 1 from Sir Harold of Kane. Rog, he's back. He's back.
Yeah, eerie stat, Dave. One that's actually like Ouija board worthy. 3 of Tottenham's 4 results this season, exactly the same as last season. Everton away, 1-1. Palace, 1-0. Stoke, 4-0, Dave. Hard to tell in this game if Spurs were dominant or if Stoke just wilted after the first goal went in on 41 minutes. It is a damning piece of evidence that Mark Hughes' team have conceded 4 goals for the 5th time in their last 10 games, and they lie at the foot of the Premier League. But for Spurs, everything went right. Son looked back to his direct, hard-charging best. Lamella looked like just a gent that was full of cunning. Christian Eriksen, perhaps uncoincidentally after signing a new contract, seemed settled on the field for the first time this season. Dele Alli scored, and so did your man, Harry Kane. And the fact that Charlie Adam was unable to injure a Tottenham Hotspur player,
that's
that was just
miracle.
Cherry on the cake.
That's a miracle. Yeah, Harry Kane's goal, we should say, he whiffed it on the way in.
Yep.
It then came back in. He had a terrible first touch, and yet it still somehow fell to him, and he knocked it in with his left foot. It's a goal.
50 goals in 90 league games now for Kane. A ton of those games as a substitute in the early days. Cue Twitter banter from Kane, making light of his reputation as a slow starter in the Premier League. It felt weird to score so early in the season.
Very, very funny.
Tottenham face Sunderland and Middlesbrough in the next league games. A couple of Champions League games sprinkled in. Spurs fans will now want to see this kind of consistency on a regular basis.
And Arsenal fans won't want to see any consistency at all from their North London neighbours. Arsenal beat Southampton 2-1, a 94th minute. We're Santi Cazorla's team now. Penalty sees Arsene Wenger's side escape with their second win of the season and saves Lucas Perez and Shkodran Mustafi from witnessing what would have been some unsavoury Arsenal fan TV after their debut.
Oh, my God, Dave, is that ever true? I mean, Arsene Wenger, before the game, hailed the maturity of his squad. He said, it's the first time for a long time I've had a team of what you can call men. And among those men, a cluster of new faces. New faces meaning new hope. New hope for Arsenal fans means normally new hope that can be dashed. And it was a slow, ponderous start for the Gunners, took to the field in what's now become an unfamiliar red and white jersey. Unable to hold on to the ball, both Walcott and Ox, very Wilshire-esque, Davo, in that they're now Arsenal players who were better in their teens than in the present day. At Clone Poster tweeted us, when the commentators actually finished saying Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, several other things have already happened.
Quite a lot happened in this game, actually, with people not realising it. Notably, Petr Cech, that goal from Dusan Tadic, Rog.
A fantastic save first by him.
Yeah, fantastic save. Tips it onto the bar and then saves it again on the way out, but with the back of his head, and knocks it right in.
Arsenal struggled to wake from the slumber. New boy Mustafi grew into the game, but Perez saw little of the ball. He played what he is, a pacey yet average willing runner. So new to the team, he didn't have rhythm yet with his teammates, and he was pulled off after 60 minutes. I think he's going to be more of a last 10 minutes impact substitute than a frontline starter. And Arsenal were ponderous up front. They did pull their way back into the game, though, thanks to the quick mind and fantastic finishing of one of their defenders.
Yeah, Koscielny, what a goal. Poor, another overhead kick for the weekend. The kind of goal you don't see defenders score very often.
I love Koscielny. He's the man with the narrowest face in football. And you saw Arsene Wenger on the sideline like, who needs world-class strikers when you have centre-backs who can score like that? At JSpar10 tweeted us, Koscielny is French for better than Giroud. And from that point on, Southampton just tried to grind out a draw. Goalkeeper Fraser Forster booked for time wasting in the 54th minute. Tells you all you kind of need to know. Arsenal, heavy-footed. Santi Cazorla trying to drag them to victory. Created chances. Alexis misfired. Giroud headed wide. Monreal, blew his chance. And with every miss, Davo, the atmosphere in the Emirates, Arsenal fans just assume the position. It's like paint manufacturers have invented 47 shades of white. The Emirates has got 40 or so levels of total quietness. But it changed in the 91st minute as Premier League writers continued their narrative of soft, soft penalties.
Font on Giroud. We've watched this, maybe about 15 times preparing for the show yesterday. I still can't exactly see where the foul is located.
Maybe their clouds of Drakkar Noir may have overlapped for a second. It was even more controversial because Southampton's Shane Long had clearly been cleated at the other end. No foul given. Yet the referee, Robert Madley, ignored Long's plight and gave this penalty for pretty well nothing in the 91st minute. It was a terrible decision, but game-changing. And as you said, a single late penalty kick turned Arsenal fan TV from an Eli Roth snuff film to a light-hearted rom-com.
Yeah, absolutely, Rog. Okay, cross to East London. West Ham 2, Watford 4. A game of street ball sees the Hornets storm back from 2 goals down after they claim West Ham players tried to mug them off with a series of stylish flicks and breakdance goal celebrations.
Yeah, the most Spursy performance of the season. Payet, first start of this campaign. And he quickly reminded the basket of deplorables at London Stadium why he's the most artful footballer in London.
Only half of them, Rog, should be in the basket of deplorables.
Oh, Antonio scored, did the worm on the field. Favourite move of mine back in the days of the Liverpool College breaking crew. But that second goal, David, that filthy assist, Jason White Chocolate Williams would have said, wow.
Yeah, quite a Rabona, Rog. Quite a little run from Mikel Antonio. Not very good defending, but a fantastic finish. And they just look ascendant at 2-0 up.
And at that point, as you said, Troy Deeney described how irritated Watford were by West Ham's show-off antics. The worm, the Rabona, in one of my favourite London phrases, Dave, straight off one of the Streets early albums, he told the media later, West Ham were trying to mug us off.
Yeah, they certainly were trying to mug us off.
And they put that frustration, Watford, to good effect, orchestrating the most resounding comeback of the season. Igalo, then Troy Deeney himself, in a surprisingly delicate chip fashion for a man who looks ever more like Fat Drake. And it all just claps West Ham's defensive muscle. Now badly out of shape. They had a club record for clean sheets last season, but here completely lost as Watford ran wild like Vikings pillaging defenceless villages on the History Channel. Uh-huh. West Ham's dream move to London Stadium, Davo. It's souring. There was fisticuffs, ugly scenes.
Yeah, scenes not only between Watford and West Ham fans, Rog, between West Ham. There was West Ham fan on West Ham fan violence. Seems nobody can figure out the seating over there, who should be standing, who should be sitting, whether you can stand. Just everybody's very upset about it.
Watford fans, by the way, trying to fight Watford fans, it's like fighting a couple of hundred substitute geography teachers. ugly scenes captured best by a tweet from one of their own supporters that's doing the rounds. Lowest I've felt as a West Ham fan. Horrible soulless stadium in a poncy area surrounded by plastic fans watching a team.
Okay, Rod. Bournemouth 1, West Brom 0. The Cherries collect their first win of the season on Jack Wilshere's South Coast debut. An adroit 79th minute Callum Wilson flick. Welcome back, Callum Wilson. Oh. Proved the difference in this one.
Yeah, Tony Pulis's West Brom continue to splutter as their fans' only enjoyment was shouting, "Football is for the majority of the game."
They are West, the worst.
West Brom are set to seal a $224 million deal with new Chinese owners on Thursday. Yeah. Pulis, under growing pressure, one win in 14 games. The Stannis Baratheon of the Premier League may not be with us for much longer.
Okay, Rog, Middlesbrough 1, Crystal Palace 2. Christian Benteke begins to wash the stink of his Liverpool stint off, opening his SAF London account in the northeast. Rog, Palace earned their first win of the season as they beat Middlesbrough in Middlesbrough 2-1.
Relegation six-pointer. Palace, just their third win since December 26, 2015. And Benteke opening his account is incredibly significant. He could be the kind of reliable source of goals the Palace side have craved. And he'll certainly get the service from the wings he was never going to get from a Klopp-managed side in Liverpool.
I had dinner with Steve Parrish on Friday night and his lovely daughters. And he was telling me the night before driving up to this game just how rare wins are and how great they feel when you actually win. And he said the drive down from Middlesbrough to Palace was just a special, special day. Anybody could have won that game, but just was a special, special feeling.
Ah, they mugged him off.
They mugged him off. Did something, yeah. Burnley 1, Hull City 1, Roger. Last gasp stunner from Roberto Snodgrass sees Mike. He cannot be Scottish, Roger. He must be continental. Sees Mike Phelan's men claim a share of the spoils at Turf Moor after Steve Dufour put the Clarets ahead with a 30-yard stonker of his own. Everton 3, Sunderland 0, Rog, the team that you always like to put at the back of the rundown. It's the team that nobody's talking about and could be their title to lose. After a drought of 1,139 minutes, Romelu Lukaku goes off for a trinity of goals in the span of just 11 minutes. Everton is up to third place. They trail Chelsea only on goals scored, Rog, not on goal difference.
That means a lot. It means it counts for a lot, that.
It means their defence is better, Rog. Fantastic, fantastic performance by Everton.
And a meaningful victory in the David Moyes Memorial Derby. Romelu Lukaku, first Everton player in 16 years to score a Premier League hat-trick away from home. Crush talk about his goal drought going back to March 12th. Took Everton a while to summon the potency that led to what did become a blowout. They struggled. Too slow with the ball against Sunderland's organised resistance until Ronald Koeman yanked the consistently erratic decision-making Ross Barkley at half-time.
Yeah, and they're not moving much, Ross Barkley.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dark reality. Could be, he's the kind of player that if he doesn't work out how to unfurl the definite skill sets that he has at his disposal, he could be Middlesbrough's Ross Barkley.
You know, I thought Robbie Earle made a great point at half-time saying, thank God for a manager like Koeman coming into Everton who has the guts to pull him and say, that's not good enough, Ross. You can't play like that and expect to start.
Thank God for Gay, who's become a cult hero at Everton already since his $9 million bargain arrival from Villa. He's this season's N'Golo Kante, pressing, tackling, intercepting, also making phenomenal passes that probe the gut of the opposition. The ball he swung over for Lukaku to finally end his months of constipation. 1,139 minutes of out of crap. No longer, Dave. And when Everton purr, you were trying to get me excited. You were talking about the attacking trident.
Oh, Yannick Bolasie, Rog. This was, we spoke about Everton's transfer window. Lots of questions about why they spent so much money on Yannick Bolasie. What seemed like at the last minute, not a player they seemed to be really in their plans until the last minute. I thought Yannick Bolasie looked very good. Yes, he made some maddening mistakes as well, but put in some fantastic balls. He's got speed down the left. Fantastic performance.
Yeah, he's supremely mercurial, and he used up his once every four games moment of magic in this one
yaw-yaw
to set up Lukaku to nut it home from close range, ending a goal drought that lasted forever, 7 minutes. Mm. And at that point, you saw that Everton can befuddle the best defences if they try. Sunderland, though, did not have the best defence. Lukaku added a third. Games like this make me want to marry Romelu Lukaku if he'd have me. Yeah. This is only the second time in Premier League history Everton have won as many as 10 points in their opening four games. The other, 2006, 2007, when we finished six. Oh, David.
Could be your year, Rog.
I'm starting to worry.
Yeah.
Last night, I dreamt of Gay to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Ross Barkley to Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Ronald Koeman to Real Madrid.
Uh-huh.
Lukaku to Bayern. Long-time listeners will understand what I mean when I say Nigel rules might soon be in effect.
Yeah, it is amazing that David Moyes can get the best out of Romelu Lukaku, Rog, but only when he's coaching against him. Okay, here we move to really the centre of your life, Rog. It's no longer Everton. It's our talk again. You live for it,
is
Rog.
Is it a game?
Yeah.
Or is it
no, it's
ultimately
a game.
The meaning?
It's a game.
Is it, though?
It's a game. It's not really worth any money. It's worth a few patches, which is important. Ronald Koeman may have Everton cruising, but he caused you some tense moments, Rog, in our Togger Fantasy League last night. Poor. You had Holgate down to play and then suddenly you realised he wasn't playing. I've never seen you move so fast, Rog.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, Dave. I just say Togger, our fantasy league that thousands of you have joined, and we are grateful. Yep. And by the way, please get your friends to join this, because by joining it, you're supporting an American-initiated fantasy programme, which is started by a couple of guys in Austin. I think it's a phenomenal story. I will say, competition has gripped us here in the crap part of Soho.
Yeah.
I picked Mason Holgate for Monday's game. He's the best gate since Stargate. And we were shooting live. So I was in a studio when the teams were announced and I looked out the window and I saw producer JW talking to producer Jen Simons in that weird way like footballers do at the final whistle where they put their hand over their mouth.
Yeah.
And I realised they'd seen the Everton team.
Yeah.
I also realised Seamus Coleman had replaced Holgate as a starter, and they, people who are good and honest and trusting, were debating whether to tell me or not. So I just couldn't. They wanted me not to be able to switch him. They decided not to tell me. Togger, are you proud of yourself? You've turned the crap part of Soho into Lord of the Bloody Flies.
This is such an insight into the dysfunction of your mind. Because not only were JW and Jen not talking about that, yeah, not thinking about it, could care less.
I'm onto them.
They don't see you. If they did care that much about Togger, they wouldn't see you as a threat anyway. JW is like 46th in the league or something. It's just a... This is just isn't
JW
a deal.
JW is like Pep Guardiola. He's like the Mr. Nice Guy on the surface.
You need an enemy. You need competition to get you in the mood. I understand it, Rog, but it's just a fantasy game. Having said that, it is superb. Last week's fantasy winner, Brendan _LFC, had close to a perfect lineup. He had Kevin, Sadio Mane, Firmino.
Do you think it's the Brog?
And for some reason, he had Joel Matip. He wins a special Men in Blazers fantasy patch. The final
the
draft.
Still doing the Premier League. It's my only way to keep a connection to the
really
Premier League.
You should really be focusing on the second half of Celtic against Barcelona. The final draft of our new patch is now in. We're going to be posting it on our social later this week. To join our league, just download the Togger app on your phone. Select your perfect 11. And you'll be all set for next week's game. It's a game. It's a new game every week, Rog.
It is. And the new patch, game every by week. The way, designed by Ian Hutchison, long-time GFOP, is absolutely fantastic.
It is. It's
we
amazing.
Should post that on social media.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great.
Okay, Rog, in MLS. The greatest American resurrection story since Netflix brought Arrested Development back to life. Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's national team's all-time leading scorer, Landon Donovan, made his return to the L.A. Galaxy nearly 2 years after retiring. He came on in the 83rd minute of the Galaxy's 4-2 win
Stigmata.
Over Orlando City Sunday. I think he might have taken those My Name is Chocka ads a little bit too seriously.
They got him back in the mood.
They got him back in the mood.
I think
mood.
It was playing along with...
My name is Chocka.
I think it was along... It was playing with Spray Dan. It's like really influenced him. Going back in this, made him believe. Hat-trick Rick.
What is going on, Rog? What is going on?
I have a problem with it.
Take me into the mind of Landon Donovan.
I will in a second. But I'll just say, if LCD Sound System, Jay-Z or Barbra Streisand can retire and then unretire, and Barb's gone on to make 7 albums, have 2 number ones, why can't Landon, Davo? I will say, Landon, I know you're listening. I cried tears during their retirement ceremony. I think whenever I hear Five for Fighting or Boys to Men, I think of you and your death.
Yeah.
And now you're back.
Yeah.
Oh, those tears are in vain. I made a film with Landon, as you said at the beginning, and the great John Hawke, about his retirement for ESPN back in the day. And back then, he kept saying the same thing. And this is what I find fascinating. His mantra was, I've given my life to football. It's all I know. I've sacrificed so much that's really important. And now I want to become a better brother, a better son, a better uncle, and hopefully a father.
You know what the problem is? The rest of life.
Yes!
It's overrated.
Yes!
It's not that good. Playing chocker is much better than the rest of life.
Because it numbs the pain. This is why, when he strode onto the field in the 83rd minute, I realised, and I may be way off base here, but it made me think you hate life because of the grind. You get away from the grind, and then you realise you actually miss the numbing quality of the grind. Because life without it, it's too real, Dave. It's too intense.
You look in the mirror, and all you see is Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
You're not Landon Donovan, star soccer player anymore.
Yeah, and that's why I love football, Davey, because it numbs the pain. And God love Landon for coming back, because he might become to LA Galaxy what baseball, the late great Minnie Minoso, was to the White Sox. They kept bringing back the legend once every decade. I think he played into his late 50s to ensure his career technically spanned 5 decades. I think it's an amazing thing to do, amazing thing to be. I do love the theory that watching Christian Pulisic break Landon's record as the US's youngest goal scorer spurred Landon back into action. I can just see Landon looking in the mirror and saying to himself, damn you, Pulisic, let's see how many goals you can score as an old person. But I think the return is problematic for MLS. I think if he came back and started scoring immediately, it would be incredibly damning for the quality of play. But I will say, when he did come back on, he looked more like an accountant who'd wandered onto the field to play accidentally.
And I love that theory that his intention is to become America's oldest goal scorer. That's wonderful.
My favourite part of the entire experience was the Fox broadcast at the end, where Rob Stone and our great mate Alexi Lalas interviewed a clearly exhausted Landon post-game. And he could just see the inner monologue running through Alexi's mind. If Landon can come back, maybe I, Lalas, can then retire.
I, Lalas. Grow. I like that. That would be a great name for his autobiography. I, Lalas.
He can grow back the goatee.
Yeah.
Slap on the headband one more time. Just make a comeback. It's time. It's time for Lalas to unretire. Come on, Kansas City Wiz. Give him a contract.
Yeah, I love that idea. Love that idea. Any other MLS news, Rog?
Yeah, both New York teams suffered defensive misfires this weekend. Mm. NYCFC wobbled in a 3-1 spanking against New England.
Yeah, Lamp scored again, though.
Their defence leaked more goals than any other in MLS. Big problem.
Lamp scored again, though.
Numbing the pain of the grind. Mm. The Red Bulls' defensive problems of their own. Team cruising against DC United, arch rivals. Only for DC to net 2 in stoppage time. One from Jewish Messi. Steve Birnbaum, who both scored and crushed the curse of Rog after his fantastic pod appearance last weekend. Toronto lead the East. Jose Altidore, best club form he's been in since his Alkmaar days. 6 goals in his last 8 games. 2 quick notes, Davo. Christian Pulisic, America's sweetheart, returned home to Dortmund to have his coach pour complete cold water on his US men's national team heroics. Thomas Tuchel, who benched him despite the team going down at Red Bull Leipzig in a surprise loss. He said those 2 games were against St. Vincent and Trinidad. If you play against Trinidad, it's not like you've got the right to play Bayern in the Super Cup. How dare he?
He forgot about Tobago and the Grenadines, Rog.
And talking about great Americans, Abby Wambach's admission that she suffered from alcohol and prescription medical addiction for years. It's another bombshell in the wake of the Hope Solo saga. The US Women's 2015 World Cup team, they suddenly seem a little bit more behind the music-y than they did this time last year, David. We'll say, to counter the bad juju, it's a legendary Heather O'Reilly's final game with the US Women Thursday. We've taped a podcast with the great Heyo that covers the span of her entire career. It is a beautiful, beautiful piece of work by JW and Lexi, and it's a must-listen for any young player.
JW and Lexi did the interview.
They're the puppet masters. It's like Roxanne.
I heard you're the regular Barbara Walters on this interview, Rog.
It's a must listen for any young player who dreams of battling their way to the top. Okay. And it drops on Thursday.
Listen to it with a box of tissues.
We love Heyo.
Okay, very good. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Eric Bruder
Oh, great American name with a K on the end of Eric.
Yeah,
Bruder.
We don't have K's. Eric in
England. Bruder, wonderful. Gentlemen, I was born, raised, and have lived most of my life in Cleveland. Of course you have, Eric Bruder. Few understand more than me the appeal of rooting for the home team, even if the relegation-worthy Cleveland Browns, yeah, really did watch our show closely, have tested my interest in American football. About a decade ago, I took interest in the Premier League. I've never understood how someone can become a fan of a team with no personal connection. For all the Premier League I've watched, I never, ever picked a team on principle. And yet, my thoughts have changed. A few years ago, a new neighbour moved in. The morning of the season kickoff, he put out a Liverpool flag. Every year, he puts out that flag. And at the point in the season when it becomes clear that Liverpool won't win the league, the flag disappears. You live next door to John Green. There is something about seeing that flag out there on the lawn that has spurred me to action. It has become suddenly totally clear. I must become a fan of Everton. I've ordered an Everton flag to put out and will leave it up even until after the Liverpool flag comes down, even if Everton is lower in the table. Is spite a good reason to become a fan? You wrote this to Rog? My neighbours are nice people, but if you're going to be a fan of a team, be a true fan. I can be a better blue than he is a red. Am I doing the right thing? Rog, let's hear your completely unexpected answer.
First of all, I want to know where the Liverpool flag goes out proudly and then is just suddenly taken down. Is it just like shame?
Or what? It's a fit of rage at 4 in the morning.
I'm going to address you directly, Eric, and I'll just say, spite is a perfectly good reason to drive your support of a team. And my advice to you is simple. Hate until you have no more hate to give and only love is left.
Yep. Beautiful, beautiful words. From Roger Bennett. Okay, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. On Friday, Chelsea host Liverpool at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on NBCSN. That's followed immediately by another crap live version of the Men in Blazers show at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
It's another version of the show. It's not a repeat.
Yeah, no, but it's a live. It's another
it's
live
show. It's a fresh
show.
Serving.
Assuming
of a
that
dollop
the ratings
of crap
are
terrible.
Yeah, today we might have another one. Okay. Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Network NBC, Bradley, Edwin, Guzan and Middlesbrough visit Everton, Rog. And Sunday at 7 a.m. on CNBC.
Nigel.
Because it's all business, Rog. Now they make more than 500 million revenue. Watford versus Manchester United. Also Sunday, an MLS doubleheader on Network. Fox Sporting Kansas City. And maybe with Alexi Lalas playing at the heart of the central defence versus LA Galaxy at 2 p.m. Toronto FC versus New York Red Bulls at 5 p.m. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Fridays, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rod?
A book. It's Hitler, Ascent, 1889 to 1939 by Volker Ulrich.
Oh, that sounds like an uplifting book, Rog.
Does it sound like a 600-page masterpiece retelling Hitler's rise?
Yeah.
His mysterious familial background, which he later mythologized. It's all deconstructed, as are his struggling days in Vienna and his self-refashioning in the beer cellars of politically confused Munich. And on to the narrative of his savage but brilliant rise to power. A rise which makes this seem such a terrifying read today, because he was written off, underestimated by every power broker who encountered him along the way, Dave. The most powerful aspect of this magnificent book, it makes Hitler less a monster, more incredibly human, and all the more terrifying for it. I will say, this book has made me realise just how depressing the books I read actually are.
Really?
Yeah.
It took that for you to realise it.
It's my birthday tomorrow. I'm going to try and read happier, more rewarding volumes in the year ahead. So suggestions from GFOPs are welcome.
Yeah, Roger won't read any of them because he needs to read the most depressing books ever written. Okay, Rog, believe it or not, I'm not putting a depressing book into the Emporium this week. Little George, my boy, 5 years old. It's going to be my proudest moment. He's starting Muay Thai. This Friday, had to go and get him some special youth kids Muay Thai boxing gloves. Look at those little cuties. They're amazing. He's been practicing with them all weekend, Rog. He just loves the things. I've got to say, my hands hurt. He's been 1-2-3-ing me a little bit hard. I don't know Muay Thai. I've been teaching him a little boxing. Size small, just $39.41. They're the twin special Muay Thai boxing gloves with a Velcro wrist strap for full security. Ideal for quick wear and takeoff.
And Rog, if your child's love of Muay Thai wears off quickly, they also can double as an anti-nose picking protective and implement.
And self-harming tool. I also bought him Who Was Bruce Lee. I love the Who Was books. My daughter Ingrid likes them. I bought him Who Was Bruce Lee. He can't read yet, but I'm going to be reading him that book at bedtime this evening.
I read my children who was... I read the Helen Keller one.
Yeah.
And I read the Harriet Tubman one.
Yeah.
On alternate nights.
Yeah.
And you're there reading Who Is Bruce Lee.
Yeah, that exactly. That is the difference between our households, Rog. Visit meninblazers.com to sign up for our newsletter, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Follow us on Twitter, @meninblazers, @embassydavies, @rogerbennett on Instagram, @meninblazers, @embassy_davies on Facebook, meninblazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Matumbo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Damn you, Apple. Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To Tweed, nearly.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Don't mug me off.
No comment.